Welcome one and all to another day here at The Damage Report. I'm Johnny Rolla. Very excited to welcome back to the program with the one, the only, at least as far as I know, Maz Jobrani. Maz, how's it going?
Good to see you, John. It's going well. I think you're right. I know I have all the social media handles. I've monopolized Maz Jobrani. So if there's another Maz Jobrani out there, he's got no chance. He stands no chance against this Maz Jobrani. Yes.
He'll have to be like real Maz Jobrani or the official Maz Jobrani or something. And that's not good.
That's not
good. No, not at all. But anyway, very glad to have you here. I know that you've been quite busy recently. Where have you been?
I've been touring all over the country. I was in Arizona. I was in New York. I was in Boston, but I'm going to be in Dallas. I'm going to be in Detroit. I'm going to be in LA and I'm going to be in Abu Dhabi. I'm going to be in the Middle East. I'm taking this thing worldwide, John.
Wow. Wait, when are you going to be in LA?
LA is May 2nd as part of the Netflix as a Joke Comedy Festival. I'm going to be doing two shows at the Improv on Thursday, May 2nd. So if you're around, come out, man.
Okay, I love the idea. Getting all the way to the Improv with the baby seems tough, but I love the idea and I would love to see a perform in person. So
don't bring the you're not supposed to bring the baby.
I'm not gonna bring the baby.
Oh, okay.
Does the baby have to have two drinks at these clubs? Anyway, no.
They have milk.
They do. Okay, awesome. Maybe my daughter and I will have a nice glass of milk each. But anyway, I'm gonna try to make that happen because that would be really fun. And everyone, a lot of cities there. Maybe you're in Detroit or LA or Abu Dhabi, and you can watch the show. Go see it.
Just go to MazJobrani.com. Again, I've monopolized Maz Jobrani. So go to MazJobrani.com. I will be coming to your city. Raleigh, Houston, you name it, I'm coming. I got nothing to do but this show and touring.
Nothing but this show and comedy and Rebel HQ too. You do a lot. Let's not forget.
Yeah.
Anyway, very glad to have you here. We've got some good stories for you, particularly coming up in the aftermath. So apologies to the podcast, although you can always go to youtube.com/damagereport to see this extra content. I wanted to save the story for you because I wanted your thoughts on the revelation of all the different techniques that Donald Trump uses to cheat at golf. I thought that you would have fun with that. And also a right wing sort of onion ripoff getting attacked by its own side now for daring to make a joke at their expense. I thought you as a comedian would appreciate that. And Jon Stewart, who took down Donald Trump on the topic of real estate valuations just in the last week. Is he being hypocritical? Did he do the exact same thing? We're gonna weigh what passes for evidence in this. So lots to look forward to. Everyone buckle up for that. And also, I am very pleased to announce two things. One, coming up 30 minutes after the aftermath, we're gonna be hanging out with our monthly members hangout. So if you're a tier 3 member, you can come hang out. It'll be a lot of fun. You can become a member if you want to. Also, the Blue Apron gift cards have returned as of today. So if you send us a comment that's particularly insightful or witty or whatever, as long as we enjoy it, you might get yourself a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So get those comments in and we will be looking. With all that said, Maz, you ready to talk some news?
Let's party, baby.
Let's do it. We got a lot to talk about here because as we're here talking about this, Trump's lawyers are in Georgia once again trying to get the RICO case against him utterly thrown out. And we want to dive into the chances that that might work, starting with this.
So, Laura, the core argument that we just heard from Donald Trump's lawyers is that everything he's being prosecuted for here is protected First Amendment political speech. And you heard the lawyer argue that even if the speech is false, even if it's unpopular, it's still protected.
So that is legal analyst Ilhan Hanag saying that this is effectively a free speech argument. The argument is everything Donald Trump and his co-conspirators did in Georgia in trying to overturn the results of the election and calling up Brad Raffensperger and telling him to find me the votes, that's not a crime. That's just speech, okay? Doing that or, you know, filing documentation under false witness or getting people to impersonate elected officials. All of that is just speech. Now, is that likely to work? I have my thoughts, but I want to continue with a little bit more from CNN. Take a look at this.
When does this First Amendment issue get decided? And you heard the judge sort of say, well, why don't we, isn't the way we decide this is we put it in front of the jury and we let the jury decide at trial. Donald Trump's lawyer objected to that. He said, no, we'd like you to throw it out now. Why go through with the whole exercise of a trial if this indictment ultimately is going to be no good. Really important one other thing to note, Laura. This same argument was made by Donald Trump in his federal case in Washington, D.C. relating to election subversion. And the federal judge there, you heard reference to this, Judge Chutkan, she rejected that First Amendment argument. She said, no, I find this is not protected speech. It crossed the line into criminality and we'll leave it for the jury.
Okay, so I'm glad that he cited that, but you should also understand that in related cases, the Trump co-defendants, Kenneth Chesbro, the Cheesebro himself, and Sidney Powell also tried to hide behind the First Amendment for the either the crimes they themselves committed or the organization that they did with other people to have crimes be committed in pursuit of this overall effort to overturn the results of the election. None of those First Amendment defenses proved to be successful. So that's not to say that this one won't. Maz, we've seen judges bending over backwards to help out Donald Trump, including earlier this week in New York. So it could happen. There doesn't appear to be any reason that it should happen. What do you think?
It's also frustrating because the fact is that the speech that they were using was to commit a crime. Overthrowing an election is a crime. An election that was done fairly. They're basically trying to take away the votes of those people who voted, many of them people of color, many of them other people who were frustrated with Donald Trump, sick of Donald Trump. Matter of fact, it's interesting because he always brags about, I got the most votes, I got the most votes, people love me so much. But yes, you also inspired the people that hate you to come out and vote. So I will give him that, that he's good at inspiring people to come out and turn out at the polls. But the fact that these guys are trying to hide behind free speech is the most ridiculous thing in the world. Given that it's like saying like, oh, we were conspiring to rob a bank, but we're talking about it. That's free speech to talk about and try to convince people to go along with this bank robbery and this big, like you said, this big RICO case. It's the most ridiculous and frustrating thing for us on the outside to watch and watch how slowly it progresses and how much crap they threw. He said that the Trump's attorney said that just because it's unpopular doesn't make it illegal. It's not that it was unpopular. It's criminal. You tried to overthrow. It's not like he was saying something like, when this is done, I want to go and start I want to secede and I want to start my own country. All right. That's not illegal to say that. You can say that. That's an unpopular idea, but you can say it.
Yeah.
But you actually,
Yeah. I just like, but also it's like, okay, we can't really defend that it wasn't a crime. So we'll pretend that the issue is that it's unpopular because that's a territory that we think we can defend. It would be like if I tried to hire a hitman, which is speech, but a crime, but I did it like this in a silly accent, you know, I want you to wipe him out. You know, I speak in this crazy over the top accent. And then when they take me to court, I'm like, you know, I understand it was offensive to use that accent. That's not the problem. That's not what people have an issue with. It's the crime that you're attempting to coordinate. And it wasn't just the things that they said. They want to make it seem as if our biggest issue is Donald Trump bleeding the big lie. That's not the issue. It's you putting pressure on election officials in the state, Brad Raffensperger. Remember, it wasn't just like I always say, shorthanded as I need you to find me the votes. He threatened Brad Raffensperger saying that he might be committing a crime if he doesn't secure the election. You know, maybe they'll come looking for you. He was literally using his position as the then president of the United States to pressure an election official to violate the law. And they encouraged people to pretend to be electors. They were impersonating actual officials in our government. They were signing documentation, bearing false witness, which is supposed to be a big thing for Christians or whatever. They did all of those things. And the issue with them wasn't that it was unpopular. It was that they were indeed crimes. And that is why this shouldn't go anywhere. But again, all of these legal processes have not necessarily gone the way they should have. So everybody brace yourself. You don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny. First of all, the accent you did, I think you would have been using the Borat defense. I was doing Borat. I did not mean to kill him.
He's nice.
But He's nice, but you're absolutely, listen, I had a neighbor who was very aggressive and at one point he was a little off. He got aggressive. We called the police. The police came over. They said, well, did he threaten to, attack you? I said, he didn't say those words. He said, did he threaten to kill you? I said, he didn't say those words. He goes, so he does that. We can't do anything. So the police were saying, until the actual threat happens, we can't do anything. Now, in Donald Trump's case, he actually said, as you said, find me the vote. Let overturn the election for me. He actually had his people saying, hang Mike Pence. He is responsible for any damage that was done that day. They keep talking about Ashley Babbitt. He's responsible for Ashley Babbitt. He riled his people up.
Yeah.
He sent them to the Capitol. It's so plain sight. We see it in our own eyes. We see it plainly. And for these lawyers to be playing these games and for this legal system to work so slowly, any other country, January 7th, he would have been in handcuffs and he would have been in a military tribunal and he'd be away for life. Because the truth is, all joking aside, it was very serious. If those people had gotten to Mike Pence or Nancy Pelosi or any other member of Congress, they would have injured and or killed that person. It was a 100%. Very serious situation. And now for these people to turn around and say, oh, they were just tourists and now they're hostages. It's so unbelievable the gall that these people have, the nerve that Donald Trump has to be running again. If anything, he should just be, you know, somewhere in the Cayman Islands or somewhere else where there's no extradition. I think he has it, but wherever there is, and just laying low. And yet he's got the gall to be back and doing this. And it's just unbelievable.
He should have been laying low and thanking his lucky stars that he was able to get away with all of it. And no, that's not enough for him. He always wants more. He wants to commit more crimes. The classified documents theft case may never happen. It seems crazy considering how obvious every aspect of the case is, but it may never actually come to pass. We have been waiting now for what feels like 2 years following the indictment of Donald Trump in the theft of these documents, following the raid of Mar-a-Lago. And still, there is no end in sight. There's no true beginning in sight when it comes to the case. And the reason for that is multifaceted. And I want to set out some of the reasons that this is moving at such a glacial pace, so glacial that it might simply never come to pass. So the Trump appointed judge in the case, Eileen Cannon, has yet to set a firm trial date despite holding 2 hours long hearings with lawyers this month. So these meetings all designed to find out when we're gonna have the trial, and yet no date has actually been set. A similar thing happened, by the way, with the hush money case. They had that same sort of hearing and they set the date, and now it's coming up in just a couple of weeks. But for Eileen Cannon, nothing yet. There have been multiple motions to dismiss the case that are still pending right now, disputes over classified evidence that have spanned months, and a bitterly contested defense request to disclose the names of government witnesses remains unresolved. So it's not just that we haven't had finality on when the case is going to begin. All of these pending things are just sort of sitting there and don't even appear to be being worked on. Eileen Cannon, most recently, still seems to be entertaining a Trump team claim about his rightful possession of the documents that she had appeared openly skeptical of days earlier. So basically, they had this big hearing about the idea that under the Presidential Records Act or whatever, they're just all his property. It's an insane claim that's just not the way it works. And when they presented the evidence for that to Eileen Cannon, she initially appeared in a note that she put out to not have bought it. Then she followed that up with sort of an open-ended question, basically accepting the premise and then asking the legal teams to respond to that with some other information. So we don't really know where she is, even on the most laughable aspects of this case. And by the way, defense lawyers have filed about a half dozen motions to dismiss the case, including on grounds that the prosecution is vindictive, election interference, and that Smith's appointment as a special counsel was illegal, or that maybe Smith isn't even his real name. There's a lot of nonsense out there. And all of that too is just sitting there waiting to be worked on. And as of right now, we should know when the trial will begin, because almost immediately after Trump was charged, way, way back, Eileen Cannon set the case for trial on May 20th of this year. Last fall, she signaled that she would reconsider that date on March 1st. Okay, obviously March 1st has already passed now. That hearing took place, but no replacement date was picked, even though both sides, operating on the assumption that the May 20th date is moot, have suggested that the trial could begin this summer. But that's just a suggestion coming from people who aren't responsible for picking the date. And again, no closer to actually having the date. And the arguments from legal observers as to why everything is taking so long, we'll get to those in a moment. They're even more, I think, infuriating than the status quo that we're in. But I want your thoughts, Maz. What do you think about this?
I mean, depressed. What is taking so, like, what cases are more important than these cases? Are they doing jaywalking cases? Are they busy, going after someone who put a sign outside their house where it wasn't supposed to? What's going on? These are the most important cases. This guy's running for president and he clearly has an out. And so whether you're Republican or Democrat, we as a people have a right to know, is he guilty or not as found by a jury? People keep complaining, Republicans keep complaining about the slow speed of the immigration lawyers and these people that come in seeking for asylum and it takes a long time to look at their cases. Well, they want to speed those cases up. How about we speed up the cases of the most important court cases in the country, if not in the world. This is the most important. This should be the fact that the Supreme Court delayed that other one is just ridiculous. And just going back real quickly as we dive deeper and deeper into this, you know, the false equivalency that the right tries to make with Biden's classified documents or even Pence's classified documents, they then don't take the next step of saying, well, when those two were asked, they returned the documents. This guy is a criminal at heart. He obstructed justice. He hid these things. He clearly hid these. The Republicans are in bed with the Suge Knight of presidents. They're in bed with the Suge Knight of politicians. He keeps committing crimes and they keep trying to move the goalposts to keep him out of jail. But eventually he's going to run someone over with his car and end up in prison. So keep going, guys. Keep going.
I don't know. I don't think he drives himself. So we've thus far avoided that. But if he ever does get behind the wheel, he will certainly hit someone.
Yeah.
In any event, the most frustrating thing about this is that he did it. It's not like every past president has had people on the other side that haven't liked their conduct. And there have almost always been assertions that laws were being broken. Okay. I remember George W. Bush winning re-election in 2004, and there were very strong suspicions that the voting machines might have influenced the outcome or whatever. There was never any really strong evidence of that. It was just sort of a feeling that people had. People had, you know, like thoughts about Obama having broken a whole bunch of laws. The thing that's most frustrating about the period we're in is he did all of these things totally publicly. He says he did all of them. The question in the classified documents isn't, did he steal them? The question is, does he get to steal them? He said he took them. He said, I can take them. They're mine. I think that's crazy. I think it's theft. I don't think it should take years to adjudicate whether you can just steal these documents. Why is Eileen Cannon asking, does the presidential records cover this now? It's been months and months and months and months. It almost seems as if maybe the point is to delay, because of course she was put on she was given this position as a judge by Donald Trump. And if she just waits long enough, then she doesn't have to rule on any of this. He could become president and he could make this one utterly disappear. That's not the case in all of these trials, but in this one, it very much is a real possibility. And so that's why it's so frustrating. And then to see, like, I want to give you a couple of examples. John Fishwick, former US attorney for the Western District of Virginia, says, my sense of it is when she got reversed by the 11th Circuit in a prior issue, that made her gun shy. So she's gone at a slow pace. Kevin McGonigal, a case for Western Reserve University law professor, says, it may be that the judge is just afraid of making a mistake, but delaying it just puts it off. Eventually, she's gonna have to make a decision about these. Yeah, but does she? Does she? Is she gun shy? Or does she see a clear advantage to waiting? Something that she has been willing to do and has not suffered any consequences for the months and months and months that have passed. What is she in trouble? Is she going to lose her position or anything? Why wouldn't she drag this out as a potential favor to the guy who put her on the court? I don't even think at this point, after all these different wrinkles that we've been through, is that even like a conspiracy theory? Like, you can debate individual aspects of it, but that overall, she has been far too willing to allow this case to be delayed. I don't think that's questionable at this point. Any last thought on that that topic?
Yeah, it's just, again, watching this in plain sight, I understand that we have a legal system. We got to take, you know, there's all these options and all these things and all these appeals and all that. But at some point, I mean, it's just, again, I will compare it to many other countries. You have a far right, you know, you have a dictatorship on one end, which again, on January 7th would have arrested this guy. And then you've got this, you know, the liberal democracy on another end, which is giving him fair trials. But at some point, come on, it's just so obvious. And it's so frustrating for all of us out here that, you know, he's just the slimiest of slime bags. 100%. He just keeps, you know, squirming his way through. And the fact that Republicans, everybody that day, January 7th, they stepped up for a second and said a couple things. That was when they had to cut him off. And if not now, if they don't have the backbone to do it now, the spine to do it now, I don't know. I really hope that the one thing that all of these court cases do is inspire others who see the danger that he is to this country and to the world to go out and vote so that he loses by a large margin. And on the day after he is, all these cases proceed full force.
Yeah, they proceed and then he does a second coup and maybe this time he'll get arrested after it. James Comer is ending his impeachment attempt the same way he started it, looking like a pathetic little weenie. So he announced in a fundraising email that basically his job here is done. It wasn't done, he didn't do it, but he's done with it. Okay, so let's read a little bit of what he announced here. It's clear that Democrats will choose their party over their country and the truth at every turn. They should be ashamed of themselves. That's why I'm preparing criminal referrals as the culmination of my investigation. So it's culminating with these criminal referrals. And we'll return to the last bit of that in just a sec. But he had earlier told Fox News that accountability in this case looks like criminal referrals. And if you don't really follow politics that much, that sounds kind of serious. Oh my God, they investigated the president and there are criminal referrals coming. Does that mean a criminal case is coming? Does that mean Joe Biden is gonna go to jail? Probably not. Criminal referrals from someone like James Comer are non-binding recommendations from Congress to the DOJ, which has its own discretion to decide whether to act. They can do it. They can do it after a serious extended process of gathering evidence, weighing the case and then doing it. Or they can just, you know, like step on 30 rakes in a row like James Comer did and then say, this really hurts, my nose is broken, I don't want to do this anymore. I guess criminal referrals. And really, that is putting the ball totally in someone else's court. Maybe the Biden DOJ's court, in which case I don't think they're going to move forward with this because there's no evidence. But what he wants to do is reassure you that this is not surrender. This is not retreat. Just wait. Trump is going to get him. He closed that funding email saying, when President Trump returns to the White House, it's critical the new leadership at the DOJ has everything they need to prosecute the Biden crime family and deliver swift justice. Yeah, but that's not even what you're saying you're going to give him. You're going to tell them that they should investigate him. Okay, I feel fairly confident they were going to try to do that regardless. What they need from you is evidence of a crime. And you haven't even been able to present something that can pass for that to Judge Jeanine Pirro. So how many favors are you really doing to the Trump DOJ? And so maybe they'll investigate him. Maybe the DOJ will be headed up by Jesse Waters or something. I don't know. Anything's possible in a second Trump term. But this really does feel like the way that this thing was launched, the lofty aspirations, they were going to take down Biden or something. My God, has it really collapsed since then? Miles, what do you think?
Just what a goofball, really. I mean, like you said, a criminal referral is just a recommendation of sorts. It's like he wrote a Yelp review. After all that, he wrote a Yelp review. He's like, you should, your potatoes were a little overcooked. Look into that. It is so, again, it's such a bald-faced lie and a waste of time. Looking at the fact that it was such a waste of time, I would encourage anyone who votes for these people, whether it's James Comer or Jim Jordan or Marjorie Taylor Greene or any of these people, look at what they have done having had leadership of Congress and control of Congress the past few years, what have they actually done? And it really is zero. Like, you had that clip of Chip Roy, who's in their party going, give me something to take back to my district to tell them that we did. What did we do? They didn't do anything. They just ran around in circles trying to find ways of doing false equivalency. Everyone, it's such an obvious thing that if we try to impeach Joe Biden, if the word impeach and Biden are even somewhere in a headline, people that aren't paying attention are going to look at that and go, see, it's all political. Biden's doing it. Trump's doing it. Everyone's doing it. No, Trump is a very different case. Trump clearly asked another country to get involved in the elections here. Trump clearly tried to overthrow a democratically elected president. I mean, it's his crimes are such real crimes. And these other people, they have all of these just loose threads that they're going off of. And again, if James Comer is in my district, whether I'm a Republican, or whatever, the next day I'm like, I'm gonna register to vote against him and just kick his butt to the curb because it's a waste of time and he's just it's just waste of energy.
Yeah. And you're 100% right about that. They need to deliver headlines, Biden impeachment. It doesn't have to say Biden was impeached or Biden, like, it really looks like he should be impeached. Just he's being investigated. And they get a major assist by right-wing media that will pretend month after month, oh, this is very compelling. You know, I find this nothing you've presented to me to be very persuasive. Meanwhile, they're like 24/7 shouting that the Trump fraud case in New York, there's no crime. There's no crime. I mean, they've literally been shown the valuations for all the properties with what Trump kept claiming they were worth. And that's nothing. But the nothing that was provided them by James Comer for Biden is super compelling. So much so that they needed to talk about it virtually every day for multiple years. So, you know, without the right-wing media, this wouldn't have worked at all. But honestly, as embarrassing as this is, it kind of accomplished their goal. Every right-winger in the country thinks that Biden shouldn't have been impeached. None of them can explain for what, but they are very persuaded. The tragic collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore hasn't just led to pervasive and seemingly unanswerable conspiracy theories. It's also exposed the utter stupidity, depravity, and bigotry of the right wing. And one of the targets of this was the mayor of Baltimore, Brandon Scott, being attacked for just speaking out about the tragedy, representing the people of the area. Take a look at what he had to say.
Everyone, this is a unthinkable tragedy. We have to first and foremost pray for all of those who are impacted, those families, pray for our first responders and thank them, all of them working together, city, state, local.
How long is it going to take to rebuild this, Mayor?
I think right now, sir, listen, we shouldn't even be having that discussion right now. The discussion right now should be about the people, the souls, the lives that we're trying to save. There will be a time to discuss about a bridge and how we get a bridge back up. But right now, there are people in the water that we have to get out. And that's the only thing we should be talking about.
So you can probably tell from that, you know, he deserves to be crucified for those comments. No, he acted exactly as you'd expect or hope that a mayor would following a tragedy like this. It was a great answer to the question of when the bridge would be repaired. You know, a lot of people have been asking that question. And honestly, I haven't thought enough about the fact that it's a little bit premature. You know, people were missing at the time. People have since been found. Six people have died as a result of this. And lots of people are less concerned about that than they are about the bridge or smearing him as being the DEI mayor of Baltimore. That's what this verified account on Twitter said. What does that mean that he's the DEI mayor? Well, there are theories, of course, not being spelled out there. Cowardly bigots are never that clear. They're afraid of the consequence of their actions, but it's not hard to figure out why he's being called the DEI mayor, despite the fact that DEI, diversity initiatives, all of that have nothing to do with him getting into that position. As most of you probably know at this point, he was elected with more than 70% of the vote. It was not some sort of equity hire. He was a popular candidate with a compelling history. Look into it. Look at all the work that he did to slowly work his way up through the political system. He did everything that you're supposed to do. But at the end of the day, he is notably still black. So they're going to ding him a couple points on that. But anyway, that was not the only attack against him. You have Elijah Schaefer putting out this meme that bridge be closed, yo. That's not what he said. I know that like you love the idea that he would be inarticulate or unqualified, clearly, especially in this sort of tragedy. He wouldn't be able to step up and represent his area. No, he did. He did. That's frustrating to you, isn't it? That he was able to do that. So forget all that stuff he said. We're gonna set that aside. We're gonna pretend that he just spoke in Ebonics or something. So that's what they're doing. And look, as I alluded to, other people are pointing out that there is a pattern to this. Professor Cornell William Brooks said, just say it, DEI is the new N-word. Okay? And I think a lot of other people are acknowledging that too. But we wanna go back to the mayor who went on MSNBC to call out these sort of bigoted comments. Take a look at this.
Allow you, Mayor Scott, if you choose to do so, to respond to the tomfoolery and attacks on you for having the nerve to be black and also a mayor.
Well, I think, listen, I know and we all know and you know very well that black men and young black men in particular have been the boogeyman for those who are racist and think that only straight wealthy white men should have a saying anything. We've been the boogeyman from them since the first day they brought us to this country. And what they mean by DEI, in my opinion, is duly elected incumbent. We know what they want to say, but they don't have the courage to say the N-word. And the fact that I don't believe in their untruthful and wrong ideology, and I am very proud of my heritage and who I am and where I come from, scares them. Because me being at my position means that their way of thinking, their way of life, of being comfortable and suffering, and while everyone else suffers, is going to be at risk. And they should be afraid, because that's my purpose in life.
That was awesome. It was well put together. I think he's 100% accurate. So any racist watching this, feel free to pretend that he didn't say any of that. And just input like a phrase on a meme or something like that, if that makes you feel better. But he's 100% right. That's all it is. There are so many people, many of them verified on Twitter, that just desperately are waiting for when they can just use the N-word. That's all they want. They just, it burns inside of them, their desire to do this. They're hoping that Daddy Trump will just usher in an era where it's acceptable, maybe with an assist from Elon Musk, and they can just start using it. These are people who are thoroughly afflicted by the brain damage that is racism, and they want to take down people like this. I don't know why, I don't know what broke them. Maz, what are your thoughts about all this?
John, I don't know why you're complaining. Racism is over. What are you talking about? It's so obvious and it's so frustrating. I get into conversations with some people who talk about DEI and they talk about, oh, race isn't an issue. It doesn't matter. You know, the best should rise, all that stuff. Let's start from the first thing that you pointed out. This gentleman was elected. He was not appointed. He was elected. There's no way that you can actually implement DEI into an election because the people chose him. So these numbnuts that are on there somehow trying to use DEI as an excuse to say that the bridge fell and the boat hit it because of DEI, just it's nonsensical. They're really bending themselves into pretzels to be able to show their racism. It's the most ridiculous and obvious thing in the world. And these people, I don't know how they look at themselves in the mirror, but they should be ashamed of themselves for even going there. And the mayor has, such poise, and the way he's trying to handle this is so clearly in a humane fashion. And when that gentleman asked, I don't think the gentleman, you know, the reporter was asking in any malicious way. He was asking the question of when will the bridge be tended to? And his answer was correct. We need to worry about the people right now. But the truth is, I'm sure the next day there's a department in the city that's dealing with, oh, how do we fix the bridge, right? It's like you can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Sure,
and
yeah.
So he was trying to remind us of the humanity. And of course, you're going to go one step further when you get these same racists and bigots finding out that the workers who perished there were migrants and they weren't American citizens. And so that's going to take them another level of saying, well, you know, I'm not going to care as much. I want my bridge up. I'm not going to care about these people because they're not actually Americans. And so it's almost sad that someone would have so much lack of sympathy and empathy in them that they would just turn to demonizing people of color at any given turn. This is a tragedy, and it's something that we should all be concerned about. And also we should be appreciative of those people who were doing those jobs at 1 a.m. when all your lazy butts would not work or want that job, and this happened to them. And so rather than demonizing these people, how about embracing these people and realizing that a majority of immigrants that come to America come to do good and help America improve?
100%. Yeah. As we said, six people have passed, all of them apparently migrants. Many had lived here for many, many years and were doing incredibly important work to maintain our vital infrastructure, and lost their lives. And yeah, they're the exact sort of people that have been demonized for decades, will be demonized every single day through this election. They'll be ignored. The loss of their life won't even be mentioned by the same sort of people that will imply that everybody who crosses the border is doing it so that they can steal something from a good white person. But it certainly should be noted. And also, we can't stay on this long. I just want to, when I've been talking about the like anti-woke movement and their like sad, pathetic crying over like people of color, women being cast in movies, I have been trying to get people to understand that this is a new form of segregation. They do not believe that these sorts of people should be allowed to fill these roles. They're for white people. They are not for black stars or women or gay people or whatever. That's sort of the anti-woke part of this. But this is the same thing. Like when you hear he's the DEI mayor, he doesn't get to hold this position. Doesn't matter how popular he is or how qualified he is. He remains to this day black, and so he should not be in the position. When you see a bunch of pathetic little people like Charlie Kirk in one of his panels talking about, when I see a black pilot, I think, oh God, I hope he's qualified because of DEI. The DEI thing just lets them say what they want to say, which is, he is so pathetic that he cannot conceive of a world in which a black pilot is qualified to fly that. So black pilots don't get to fly it without him being terrified, okay? They're carving out all these areas of American society where the only way that you can exist without being demonized or triggering fear is if you're a good white person. And if you're anyone else, you're at the very least suspicious. And it's like, I know that they're doing all of this for cover, the DEI and the wokeness and everything, but I feel like not enough people, particularly in media, are really like connecting the dots here and see what's brewing on the right and what's being normalized.
Yeah, and you brought up Charlie Kirk and also the other guy. What's the other fast talking guy? There's two of the fast talking Ben Shapiro. Just because you talk fast doesn't mean you're qualified, doesn't mean that you're smart enough to give an opinion on certain things. And really, as you just said, the words just speak for themselves. He's just saying, I talk fast, I sound like I'm qualified, and that is how I get to hide my racism. Because it's just out and out racism. I wish these people, you know, one of the problems in this country, John, is that we don't travel enough. I, as a comedian, have had a chance to travel around the world. I've been to the Middle East, I've been to Australia, I've been to Europe, all over the world. And you go certain places where there are not that many white people, and the people that are piloting your plane, the people that are lawyers and doctors, the people that are mayors and leaders are people of color. And you look at that and you go, oh, wow, there's people of color that are running this place. Oh, wow, that's a possible thing. And you realize that the color of your skin does not determine your ability to run something or fly a plane or any of that stuff. But the color of their skin does determine your ability to reach deep inside and find your racist within. And now, because of Donald Trump, because of the far right movement, these people have the nerve to say that out loud. Which is, we should all be holding our heads down for allowing this to rise up to this level in this day and age. Right now we should be progressed enough to not be patting these people on the back, but they have podcasts and they have organizations and they have
100%
followers. It is really, America should be ashamed. Like, we should all be ashamed that these people have the platform to speak in the way that they do.
Yeah, I can't speak for everyone. I feel that shame. Yeah. And just I'll close with this. Remember what they said about like Ketanji Brown Jackson? She was automatically, face alone, not qualified to be on the Supreme Court. Kamala Harris. I don't love Kamala Harris as a politician, but she was a diversity hire. That's what they say about her. Like in all of these cases. Remember Obama? No, he's obviously not qualified because he's a secret Nigerian Muslim. Like on face alone, these are spots that you are violating. You are invading spots that should be held for a good, pale person. It's so utterly normalized. And they don't just say it. They say it and they get paid and they get audiences and they get power for advocating for the new segregation.
By the way, real quickly, do they say the same thing about Clarence Thomas or Condoleezza Rice or anybody who's on the right, Candace Owens? Do they say about the people on the right or do they not? I haven't heard them.
That's a good point. No, in that particular case, it's allowed. Provisionally, yeah. You know, even Candace Owens eventually said something they didn't like and they booed her ass out. But it's a good point.
We've done a great job, but we're going to be getting rid of it entirely. But Obamacare is a disaster, okay? And I told the Republicans, I said, look, if you really want to do something, just let it explode. And then they'll come begging us to fix it, okay? Begging. This is a newer subject, but Obamacare is a disaster. And I said, we're going to do something about it.
We're going to win by knocking the hell out of Obamacare, terminating it, coming up with something much less expensive, much better. We are going to win in every aspect of our lives.
Your administration is backing a lawsuit to invalidate the Affordable Care Act. So given that people are losing their jobs now and need health care more than ever, would you consider rethinking your position on that?
Well, that's a lawsuit coming out of Texas again. That was headed up by Texas. And what we want to do is get rid of the bad health care and put in a great health care, but it could be much better than it is. And so what we want to do is terminate it.
So we want to terminate it. We want to kill it. We want it to explode. We want it gone, terminated, dead. He has been very, very clear as the years have rolled by that Donald Trump wants the ACA to be destroyed. But now he's running for president again and it's kind of popular and people don't like the idea that he's been trying to destroy this thing and swearing he'll come up with an alternate plan. And years have passed and he hasn't done that. So he is now running as fast as he can from his prior position. He's posting things on Truth Social like this. I'm not running to terminate the ACA as Crooked Joe Budden disinformates and misinformates all the time. I'm so dizzy. Where am I? What year is it? Sorry, I added that in, but it's the only explanation. What are you talking about with the Joe Budden and the disinformates and misinformates? I don't know if anyone else has ever live streamed their stroke on Truth Social, but it happened with Donald Trump right there. Are you okay, buddy? Drink some water and lay down for a little while. But he continues, I'm running to close the border, stop inflation, blah, 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 something, something, different medical plan. But here's the thing, he still has never come out with the plan. He's been saying it for years and years. Yeah, no, I'm going to destroy the ACA, but I'm going to replace it with something else. Now, one might, I think, credibly ask, shouldn't you have the replacement ready to go before you destroy the prior thing? Let alone, like, shouldn't you have at least told us what it might look like before you destroy it? But that was never the case. So now he says, don't worry about all those things I said over and over and over again. Surely I won't kill it if you put me back in office. And I think that that is kind of a risky thing for people to put their faith in Maz if they elect him again. What do you think?
He has no plan. He's got zero plans, okay? So a couple of things. First of all, the plan that exists or that might come up is probably a Republican made plan that is going to, who do you think it's going to benefit? The people or the insurance companies? I mean, clearly, the insurance companies are lobbying these guys to get rid of this, to raise their, you know, profits ultimately. So there is no plan. It really took a miracle for this to come into play in the first place. I'm always really perplexed at how good the Republican Party is at messaging to convince their base that something that's good for them, like healthcare, is actually something they should oppose because if they pass it, then the country's going to become communist, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, they call it Obamacare. That gives it the negative feeling for all these people who deep down inside also reach into their racism to dislike this Affordable Care Act. And so, you know, what a populist does, that's the problem with the Republican Party. I can sit here right now and tell you all the stuff that I don't like about Los Angeles, John. There's potholes, there's traffic, there's, whatever, the rent is high, all of that stuff. I can just scream and scream and you go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you go, what's your solution? I go, I got a solution. Don't worry. I got the solution. Just vote me in. I'll give you the solution. And you vote me in. And for 4 years, I don't have a single solution. They had 4 years. They didn't have a solution for replacing the healthcare, improving the healthcare. The only thing they were able to do under him was to increase lower the taxes that ultimately benefited the wealthy. And then, of course, the rest was just a disaster. The handling, we forget how badly he handled coronavirus. We forget. He did so many other bad things that we forget a lot of the other horrible things. His mishandling of the Muslim ban, all of that stuff. He's a disaster. Yep. He's got no plan. And if you're dumb enough to vote for him again and lose your insurance that you have now, where insurance companies can't kick you off because of a pre-existing condition, or they can't come after you for certain things and you get to keep your insurance and actually go to the hospital and get something paid for. If you're dumb enough to fall for that again, then you deserve to go bankrupt with medical bills.
Yeah. Ouch. But I can't disagree. He's been super clear. But why would anyone trust him? Why would anyone trust him? He said in 2016 when he was running that he would support single payer healthcare. I mean, come on. You cannot be this easy to con, America, please. Donald Trump loves tariffs. Donald Trump loves tariffs. And I know that because he has repeatedly referred to himself as Tariff Man, the most boring superhero in either Marvel or DC. But anyway, he wants more tariffs. He put some in his first term. He wants more. And that could end up costing you and your family quite a bit. And we'll give you all the details. So he has repeatedly floated the idea of imposing a 10% tariff on every good coming into the US, just all of it. And in particular on Chinese imports, it could be up to 60%. And I'm pretty sure a lot of stuff comes from China. So that's gonna have a big effect on many, many things that you buy. On Saturday, during a campaign rally, he promised a 100% tariff on cars made outside the US and warned of a bloodbath for the American auto industry if he doesn't get reelected. Now, here is the thing about tariffs. When you put a tariff on a good, it costs more. Now, he spins a fantasy that the home government of China would pay for it, which doesn't make any sense on its face. And what do you know? Isn't how it actually worked out. So instead, the goods that you use and consume will cost more. How much more? Well, the proposed tariffs could cost you up to a $1,500 per year for each household. That's just the 10% tariff, by the way. The 60% thing with China could end up costing far more, but we're just evaluating the lowest of his proposals. So when you break that down, that could be $90 per year more on food, $120 on oil, $220 on automobiles, $70 on clothes, $80 on electronics, and $50 on furniture and appliances. And maybe you're happy to give Donald Trump $1,500 for something that doesn't benefit you in any way. Certainly, a lot of people have been willing to do that. They bought his stupid NFTs and his shoes and his Bibles. But most people, I think, don't want to set fire to $1,500 just so Donald Trump can feel like he was a big, tough man to China. And by the way, that's the stuff that he's proposed. We've already been through this. This is not hypothetical. His earlier tariff war that he initiated during his first term cost Americans $230 billion. And again, he claims that the home countries that are exporting this stuff to us will pay for it. But an analysis by the US International Trade Commission showed that that didn't happen. It was the importers who bore almost the entire additional cost. So another thing, Maz, that if he gets reelected, he's been promising to do, and it's gonna cost people big time.
John, you're such a woke Democrat. Mexico clearly paid for the wall. China paid for the tariffs. And NATO's gonna pay for the military. It goes back to the lack of education and curiosity of Americans. All you gotta do is take one step further. Just do like a Google search and find out who pays for these tariffs. And by the way, I hate to break it to people. We live in an international world. We depend on imports and we have exports to and from other countries. So whatever multinational world Steve Bannon wants to destroy, it's too late. We're in this international world, and putting these tariffs on these companies is just going to make it, like you said, I'm doing construction on our house right now, and the prices of everything has gone up, and it's not just because of the pandemic, but it's also because of some of the stuff coming out of China. Those tariffs did affect us, and it's just plain stupidity to listen to anything Donald Trump says as if he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that he was on The Apprentice. That doesn't mean he understands business. He clearly doesn't understand how tariffs work, and he's never going to learn.